Welcome to Your Five Faces of God. This is Dr. Don Kaimi Pilipovich. I want to share with you the essence of what I've learned over 20 years of studying and practicing Chinese medicine. I've studied health and wellness from many perspectives, including Western physiology, neuroanatomy, manual therapy, osteopathy, cognitive psychology, and applied kinesiology, in addition to my degree in Oriental medicine. My clinical practice has allowed me to synthesize a Western understanding in modern language of the ancient wisdom contained in Chinese medicine. In this lecture, I will give an overview of the series and the theory behind the series. The basic idea of the course is based on five-element theory and that we have five sides to our nature that are both physical and emotional. I call it Five Faces of God because our emotions and our emotional expression represent five sides to our personality, and that each emotion represents an essential aspect or face of our being. And hence, if creation is divine, then every aspect of our body serves a purpose, and every emotion also serves a purpose. It is common to portray some emotions as positive and some emotions as negative, but this is not a useful or valid theory. We know that it is not possible to live without a liver. Why do some people think that you can live without anger? According to Chinese medical theory, it is as naive to believe that you can avoid or deny the role of anger in our life as it is to want to remove your liver and expect to live. So the question becomes, why then do we have anger and how are we supposed to use it? And why don't we fulfill this goal? Why do so many of us view anger as a negative emotion or a destructive emotion? And what stops us from being effective in using this emotion? What causes us to believe that this emotion is negative or destructive? This is what I want to explore in these lectures, the connection between the five element energies of our bodies, minds, and spirit, and how our beliefs around emotional expression limits our health on all levels. Modern acupuncture training is heavily influenced by the official version of Chinese medicine that was edited for political correctness by the communist government in the middle of the 20th century. But the inner tradition of Chinese medicine embraces a view where the ultimate aim of treatment is aiding the spiritual evolution of the client, and success of treatment is gauged on the advances in awareness in the client, with much less emphasis on physical symptoms. Now, physical symptoms resolve naturally when the spiritual roots are addressed, and when treatment comes from addressing the person's spiritual core and aiding that journey, the results are lasting on every level, physical, emotional, and spiritual. It is this inner tradition which I wish to convey in these lectures. When I first studied Chinese medicine, I studied the official version, which was really more emphasis on physical disease, because that editing by the communist government was really about removing the idea of personal destiny and spiritual growth from the medical system so that it would not be competitive with the ideology of communism. So it took me quite a long time to really search for and integrate the real deeper tradition of Chinese medicine, and I've been fortunate to have many good teachers along that path. My primary intent in doing these lectures is to aid your understanding of yourself. By understanding the proper role of each of our five aspects of spiritual development, and understanding how the five emotions can aid our development, we can evolve from having emotional reactions to having intelligent responses to our life. Now, a basic principle of both physics and energy medicine is that the act of observing something stimulates transformation. So, by creating a higher understanding of both the positive and negative expression of our emotions, then we can observe ourselves in action, and we can observe where we can grow, and that observation leads to our own transformation. For practitioners, this course is useful for your own development. And we can only really practice from our own level of observation and our own level of clarity. And so the ability to develop clarity and the tools for gaining insight into our clients starts from gaining insights into ourselves. In this lecture, I'm going to cover a brief outline of the theory behind the rest of the series. So I will go through a very basic introduction to five-element theory, at least the parts that are relevant for for this series, and I'm going to talk about the mind-body-spirit connection and how I see that actually playing out in relation to this series. I want to discuss briefly the association of the organs and the organ systems to the elements, and then the connection between the elements and the organs and what we think of as thinking or the brain. And I want to go through the idea that the physical and emotional roles of each organ imply a personality, a brief explanation of the virtue of each personality, and I'll discuss virtue more in this lecture later on, and then a little bit about each one of the five emotions, as well as how they interact with each other, so what their proper roles are, and a little introduction to how they contribute to our spiritual development and to each of the five virtues that we should strive to attain. And then the idea that we form belief systems around our roles and who we are, and that these beliefs that we develop to cope with our lives as we grow up and experience the world affect how we express our emotions and express how well our emotions can aid our spiritual development as opposed to stifling it or slowing it. The later lectures in the series will cover each one of the elements in more detail and the roles and personalities and the virtues of the related organs and the importance of the emotional expression associated with that element, that virtue, and the related organs. And then I'll talk about how distortions with each one of these emotional expressions combined with the functional dynamics or functional role of each organ lead to common belief systems. Now, there's a lot of belief systems that people could develop around their life and their perception of what's necessary, but I'm going to go through some of the ones that I find very commonly in my practice and how they relate to each one of the organ systems we're talking about. After treating over 25,000 patients, I've come to understand that the most important root of illness is the misperception of our essential nature. The misperception I'm referring to is thinking that we are separate from the Tao, which is the Chinese medicine expression of it, or separate from all that there is, or in terms more familiar to me in my upbringing, as more separate from God. This is when self-judgment arises and when we begin an internal fight within ourselves, essentially battling our natural tools for self-growth rather than using them. From this leads not only mental or emotional disease, but physical disease. I wish I could say that this observation is my own idea, but the idea that the root of all disease stems from our misperception of our true nature was written in the very first book on Chinese medicine 2,500 years ago. What I have gained over my years of practice is an understanding in modern language of how that separation and the subsequent feelings of alienation manifest as physical disease and psychological challenge in real life. But what does this actually mean? How does it help us to have such a short statement of what's wrong? How do we go from feeling separate and hence critical of ourselves and of others to feeling connected to our higher self, connected to others, and connected to the world? The gap between what we would like to believe and how we feel is a wide one. If we can only envision a single step between those two states of mind, then it seems impossible. The Indian sage Ramesh once said that enlightenment is the easiest thing in the universe because we are already one with everything. We just don't know it. All we have to do is realize it. This doesn't help. It can make us laugh or perhaps make us cry, but it still doesn't change how we feel. When we tire of philosophy, we can read quantum physics to try to further our intellectual understanding of the connectedness of consciousness and of everything in the universe. This approach is also frustrating because quantum physics is so hard to understand. In fact, leading theoretical physicists like Niels Bohr and Richard Feynman, both Nobel laureate physicists, say that if you think you understand quantum physics, you don't understand quantum physics, so don't feel bad if it seems confusing. And if it doesn't seem confusing, then you really don't understand it. Now, studying physics may pacify the intellect because at the end of all that study, it does point towards scientific validation of consciousness connection, but that's an intellectual appreciation and it doesn't actually change how we feel. and it doesn't actually lead to any inner realization. What we really need is tools for helping us change how we feel. That is what this course represents, practical observations from the five-element theory that help us to understand our nature and, more importantly, how to transform ourselves in everyday living. When we have emotions, we have feelings, and that's really what we need to transform if we're going to feel less separate, feel more connected. In order to grow spiritually, we need to change the way we experience our life so that we can change our perception of ourselves and others. Transforming the way we react to the events of our lives through understanding leads to acceptance one day at a time. My initial attraction to Chinese medicine was first that it worked for conditions I hadn't seen respond to more Western approaches, and second, that it addressed the whole person. I found it to be a mature system of medicine that has treated the whole person for thousands of years. I always felt like there was something wrong in the approach of modern experimental medicine. And to me, the biggest and most questionable experiment is the idea that you should go to one doctor for certain physical problems, another kind of doctor for other physical problems, another kind of doctor for mental problems, and yet another kind of doctor for emotional problems, and to go to somebody without any understanding of the body at all for spiritual problems. Can't I just go to someone who would look at all of me? So that's what attracted me to Chinese medicine, that it synthesized all of these different perspectives of our lives, the physical, the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual, into one theory. When evaluating someone, you should always take these different factors into account when trying to balance someone's energy. A basic part of the Chinese medicine theory is that the world, the body, and our minds can be divided into five basic components, which is the theory of five elements. So these are the elements that make up not only the world, but ourselves. At one level of understanding, this means that you can observe both physical and mental emotional symptoms as being related, and that both can be addressed by balancing the corresponding energy. It's usually broken down into identifying which element and then which organ is out of balance, as well as which emotion is out of balance. Now, this is done by identifying what physical symptoms are manifesting in the client and then understanding what organs or organ systems that might correlate to. But that's often hard to determine alone, so assessing the client's emotional state is a long tradition of Chinese medicine to get a fuller picture of which energy is out of balance, because both the emotional or psychological distortion as well as the physical distortions are both pointers to which underlying energy is actually out of balance. Now, here's a practical example. The spleen rules both digestion and worry. So if a client complains of weak digestion and seems overly worried, you can address both of these symptoms by balancing the spleen energy. This is much easier than trying to tell the person not to worry, because they will only worry about the fact that you think they worry too much. This additional worry will weaken their spleen, which will make them worry too much, and you will have reinforced the cycle of weakness. So far better to actually focus on balancing the actual energy rather than giving unsolicited advice on try not to worry. So this approach gives far better clinical results, and I can see this in my own development, that when my focus in such cases was merely on balancing a physical symptom, I would get results, but it would be more temporary in nature. When my awareness expanded to balancing the energy levels to balance both the physical symptoms as well as the emotional imbalance, then the results would be better. They'd be deeper and more lasting. But the real key to shifting the pattern in a permanent way is to understand the underlying beliefs about the world that create this tendency to worry. Then, when we get to the cognitive distortions or belief systems about why you think you need to worry and shift that, then that brings the deepest level of change. When awareness shifts that the world isn't actually as worrisome or as dangerous or as anxiety inducing, that shift in perception really makes a permanent change in both the strength of the digestion and the worry, because when the worry is released, because the perception of need to worry is released, then the ensuing weakening of the spleen energy by excess worry allows the whole body to function better. So this is the level I prefer to practice at, is identifying what emotion is out of balance, but then going beyond that to identify what's behind that emotional imbalance, what perception is going on that actually keeps the person from actually seeing the world correctly. Now, just to give a short list of the elements, the corresponding organs, and the emotions, because that's going to be how we actually organize the remainder of the course. I'll go through them now. The first element is wood, and wood corresponds to the liver and gallbladder, and the emotion is anger. The next element is fire. Now, the two primary organs of fire are the heart and small intestine, but there's also two additional meridians, which don't really have physical organs, but are still have additional meridians, and that's called the pericardium and the tripleheater. And the emotion that goes on with all four of those meridians and organs is joy and sadness, which are interestingly considered to be the same emotion, or at least two different spectrums on the same emotion. And we'll go into that more later, but that's the correspondence. The next element is called the earth element. The corresponding organs are the spleen and the stomach, and they're associated with the emotion of worry. Metal is associated with the lung and the large intestine, and their emotion is grief. And then the last of the five elements is water. And along with water, we have associated the organs of the kidney and the urinary bladder, and their emotion is fear. So now I want to go on to a little bit more about why this approach makes sense. I've kind of stated that my clinical practice is centered around looking for distorted beliefs about the world that affect some part of the body's functioning, and that understanding that both the natural function of the five elements and the natural function of the emotions, as well as the common distortions of thinking that result from five element imbalances, that's a key aspect of what I do. So I want to explain on that a little bit more. Now, when you study Western medicine, when you study physiology, the very first thing you study is the nervous system. And the reasoning behind that is the nervous system controls the body. So if you really want to get an understanding of physiology, you have to start with the control system, and that's the nervous system. So another level of analysis then leads us to the idea that, well, what controls the nervous system? And that's actually the mind. So certainly we can relate to this, that if we have anything which stimulates us into fear, whether it be a car backfiring or any kind of other event which stimulates our emotional response of fear, then it actually activates the nervous system into shifting control of the body. It activates what's called the sympathetic nervous system, and heart rate goes up, blood pressure goes up, and there's virtually not a system of the body which isn't affected by the mind perceiving that there's danger. And it's really just a perception, because there may be no danger at all. There may be just the perception of it. So the idea that if we want to control the body, we should control the nervous system, should then naturally lead us to the conclusion that if we want to control the nervous system, we should control the mind. So for lasting change, what you really want to change is the mind. Now, the part where the Chinese medicine theory comes into this is that the organ meridians control the information and blood flow to the whole body. So although I'm going to be talking about the organs as a primary emphasis of this course, in terms of the only references to actual physical things will be the organs, each one of the organs actually controls a wide range of functions within the body. And it does this by virtue of the acupuncture meridians or acupuncture channels, which communicate energy that connects the organ to various parts of the body, including the brain. And so the idea is that the organ meridians are actually considered to influence the brain, because they, in practice, actually stimulating these acupuncture meridians does change thinking. And so there's not a well-developed theory of the brain in Chinese medicine, and yet by understanding and regulating the energy within the organ meridians, very effective psychological treatment can be effected. So the philosophy is then that in Chinese medicine, the organs are the officials or the ministers of the body. And it's an analogy to courtly metaphor. The idea of if you have a large country, it's impossible for the emperor to manage each and every citizen of the country individually. And so he has officials or ministers who attend to the running of various affairs for him. There's a minister of the armed forces, there's a minister of the food supply, there's a minister of the treasury, and so on. And so there's various officials that the emperor can rely on to actually manage the other aspects of running the empire. And this philosophy is taken into the view of the body in Chinese medicine, that rather than having to manage individually every one of the 50 trillion cells of the body, if you can manage these meridians, if you can manage the energy flow in these meridians, then they will manage the rest of the body. And so it becomes a management scheme where you have to really learn the functions, personalities, and emotional states of the 12 officials, because that's how many organs and hence meridians I listed off in the meridian and organ association just a minute ago. So I've said that actually regulating the meridians organizes or regulates the body. I mean, that includes the brain, which is why Chinese medicine treatment, even though it focuses only on the organs, can actually influence psychological function and what we think of as brain function. So balancing the actual organs then balances the meridians, which balance the mind, which balance the brain, which then balances the body. And so that's really the connection between simply put, between Western physiology and Chinese medicine theory, is that the Western medicine gives us the idea that the nervous system manages the body, and psychology tells us that the mind manages the nervous system. And then Chinese medicine adds the layer that if you can manage the organs, which is a lot simpler to understand than understanding the entire mind, you can actually manage the mind, the brain, and the body. So this emphasis in this course, then, is on issues around emotional expression and how that is addressed in five-element theory. Five-element theory is a large theory, and we're not going to go over all of it. But I want to explain a little bit about why, in this course, I've chosen the issues around emotional expression and emphasize that. Now, The one of the reasons I've done that is that the principal causes of disease in Chinese medicine relate to either imbalances in emotional expression or exposure to extreme climates. So that could be like living in an extremely cold climate or an extremely damp climate or an extremely hot climate. With modern housing and central heating and central air conditioning and so on, we're more protected from climates. So actually, emotional expression and issues around emotional expression are then really and truly a leading cause of disease for modern man, because we've managed to control some of the others. And again, you know, I'm saying disease, but I don't mean just physical disease. This also includes mental and emotional disease. So, because they can't be separated. The whole idea of the five-element theory is that if there is an imbalance in one of these energies, there will be a physical imbalance, there'll be a mental or cognitive imbalance, or there'll be an emotional imbalance and there'll be a spiritual imbalance. And so really, then when we talk about cause of disease, we mean all of that. Now, a basic tenet of Chinese medicine theory is that we are supposed to strive for heavenly perfection while inhabiting our earthly bodies. The view of what it means to be human is that the human is that which is bridges heaven and earth. The human being stands on earth and reaches for heaven and actually connects earth energy and perfect or spiritual or heavenly energy. So then when we take that overarching perspective of what it means to be human, which is to be constantly striving for heavenly perfection or spiritual growth, then each element must play a role in that. And so part of the theory is that each element has a spirit or a virtue that is part of this overall goal of spiritual perfection. These virtues represent the qualities that we should seek to attain. Each one of these virtues represents an ideal or pristine view of how we should behave. What is our level of evolution that we should strive for if we want to be really walking a path that is our highest spiritual development? So that's a high goal. What I want to do is present each one of them along with their element correspondences, but then to illustrate what I mean by that, is to both define the term, but then give the ideas of what happens if we fail in our journey of mastering our emotional expression that's necessary to achieve the virtue. And so that will give us an idea of perhaps why that emotion is associated with it, and begin to give us an idea of how the actual emotion leads to development of that virtue if we can achieve it. So with that, I'm going to go through the elements again and then list off the virtues, but then also then discuss each one briefly. So the first, the correspondence. Wood, the virtue is benevolence. For fire, it is propriety. For earth, it is integrity. For metal, the virtue is justice, and for the water element, it's wisdom. So now let me go through those and explain them one by one. The wood element, again, is benevolence. And this is the desire to treat both yourself and others kindly. And so it leads to an idea of promoting not just your own spiritual growth, but promoting the growth of others and actually expecting and both in yourself and in others that your highest good and your highest ability is high indeed. And so a benevolence doesn't just mean to be kind, it means to be generous with your attention and, more importantly, with your expectations, it's to have a positive expectation for yourself and others. So that's a nice goal. But when your emotional expression is not mastered, what ends up happening is you either tend towards some kind of belligerence or resentment, or, on the other side, some kind of timidity. And so, now again, the emotion with wood is anger. So how does anger relate to this? Well, anger actually produces change. So when you are angry, you're angry because there's something you don't like and that you feel should be different. And the idea that something should be different is the first most important idea leading towards change. So anger is actually synonymous with change. Well, I shouldn't say synonymous, because anger can be inappropriately expressed. And if it's just expressed without a view towards making change happen, then that's simple belligerence. Or if you suppress anger or suppress your emotion of anger, that's timidity. So it's only possible for you to be kind to others if you can start by being kind to yourself. And you can't possibly be kind to yourself unless you acknowledge that you want to grow, that you want things to change in your life. And that means acknowledging that you're angry. Now, how you choose to express that angry, that anger, determines whether or not you gradually develop a benevolent attitude towards yourself and hence others, or whether or not you stay in belligerence or timidity. And the idea is that the events of our lives challenge us, and our reactions to those events, either each time, every day, we get an opportunity to move towards the expectation of positive change, and hence towards benevolence, or we may fail in that test, and we may either stay in belligerence or timidity, or we may move forward or closer to being more belligerent and more timid. And certainly we can see this in people. Some people are beaten down by life and they give up and they stop trying. And other people become progressively more bitter and irritable with every daily challenge. And that is not reflecting a healthy wood element, a healthy liver, or a healthy understanding of the role that anger plays. The next element is fire, and the virtue is propriety. Now, the simple definition of propriety is appropriate behavior, and we often think of that as decorum. You know, do you do the right thing at the right time? When you're at a wedding, there's certain kinds of behavior that are appropriate and other kinds of behavior which are not, and however appropriate they might be in other circumstances. And so that's the simple definition of it. But the obsolete or older definition of propriety is actually true nature. And so somebody who's acting in propriety is then actually acting from their true nature. Now, the premise in Chinese medicine is that everything is one with the Tao, or one with the universe, or one with God. And so when you are actually connected to your own essential nature, your own essential divinity, then it's possible to act in balance, because in that place of connection, it's possible to transcend other emotions and be in a place of true propriety, of being doing the right thing, saying the right thing, being in the right place and at the right time out of connection. So this is the goal, and that's something that we should strive to achieve. However, striving to be perfect all the time doesn't actually work, because we end up trying to control our behavior. And so when we're out of balance, we tend towards either tyranny or apathy. And apathy is not doing anything, and tyranny is trying to control everything or trying to control everyone. And so either one of those is a departure from being proper, from actually being present to the moment. So joy and sadness are the emotions that go with fire element, and they connect to propriety in the sense that both joy and sadness connect us to the moment, and they connect us to others. You know, when somebody is in your presence and they are really experiencing joy, it's hard not to be uplifted by them and to feel more connected. Or when you're able to witness something joyful in somebody else's life, then just that observation creates a sense of connection to that person. Of course, not everything that happens is happy. Sometimes we have loss and tragedy in our lives. And so when somebody suffers a loss and suffers something tragic and are experiencing sadness, our ability to feel sadness bridges the gap between our life and theirs, and it helps us to feel connected. And so joy and sadness are they seem like polar opposites, but they're both connected to each other by that virtue of being the emotions that help us feel connected to others. And connecting to others is the first step in feeling connected to everybody. If we can feel connected to one person, then that makes it easier to feel connected to the world and connected to our essential divine nature. So propriety actually comes from not suppressing your joy or suppressing your sadness, which is actually common. A lot of people think it's surprising that people suppress joy, but they do. They feel shy to actually say how happy they are or to express what makes them happy. If you read pretty much any self-help book about making more friends and having better friends, is the advice is to be yourself. Tell people who you are and what makes you tick and what makes you happy and what makes you sad, and put yourself out there. Actually say who you are. This is who I am, and this is how I tick. This is how I work. And it's great advice. And if it was that easy, then the first self-help book that said all that would have been the last one, but it's not. And so even emotions like joy, we have inhibitions or beliefs about their appropriateness. And that's the irony, is that our beliefs around what is appropriate often keep us from being appropriate, because they keep us from being truly present. So that's propriety, being present, actually. The earth element gives us integrity. Now, one way to look at this is the balance between caring for ourselves and caring for others. And often people are out of balance in one direction or the other. So it's actually quite hard to be in proper balance with that. And so people end up either being self-centered and selfish, or they're needy. And that's another form of selfishness, where they really need other people to fulfill them. And rather than being self-contained, or their neediness may take the form of caring for everybody else, of being overly concerned for everybody else's affairs, and whether or not that's family or the world, but that the person is not really able to have a proper balance between taking care of themselves and taking care of others. And so the idea that for instance, I think many parents can fall guilty to the idea of sacrificing for their children. And to a certain degree, one could argue that that is your job as a parent, is that you have to give up some of your freedom in order to be responsible for this life that you've brought into the world. But if you never do anything for yourself, if you never have a date night or a little time off or a little time for yourself, then eventually there's really nothing left to give that child. And so the mother or the father who says, oh no, nothing for me, is actually out of their concern or their worry for being a good mother or a good father, they have actually failed in being a good mother or a good father, because they've abandoned the essential integrity of taking care of themselves and providing a proper role model for their children by trying to do everything for their child rather than encouraging and role modeling a balance in life, a balance between doing for others and doing for self. And so the emotion that I've implied here that is involved with that is worry. If we don't think at all, which is thinking is worry, if we don't think at all about others' needs, well, then we are self-centered and selfish. But if we think too much about others' needs, then we're not able to think about ourselves. And so the being really in a reciprocal relationship with our family and friends and with the world means being in integrity, being in balance. The metal element has the virtue of justice. Now, this essentially means respect for divine justice and for the give and take of life, and the idea that ultimately both the gifts and the weaknesses that we're given are not ours to control, and the circumstances that are given to us to challenge us are also given to us, and that We will all have things given and we will all things have taken away. And although it appears that some people are given more or lose more, that this is beyond our personal control. And so the wisdom of the mental element is to embrace that divine justice involved in that and accept it. So is that give and take in life, birth and death is actually natural. It's something that occurs and we can fight against it or we can accept it and move on. So now the emotion is of the metal element is grief. Grieving is the act of letting go. So when we let go, we actually are, we need to grieve something. And that can be not just a thing that is, a person that has passed from our life or an animal, like losing a parent or losing a pet, but it's also grieving life situations and being able to surrender that attachment and that part of your life completely and fully so that you can properly move on. And so this is easier said than done, but that surrendering the control is actually necessary to move on. So if we're not able to properly grieve or properly let go, then we can either derail ourselves in one of two directions. One is that we can become obsessed with obtaining things. Now, this can be addictions, and this can be addictions that we think of as things like smoking or drinking or eating, but it can also be an addiction to success and fame and fortune. So that the need to fill that empty space created by the loss then becomes a striving to fill it with something. And so any manner of obsession over gain, over obtaining something, whether that be material or vanity or fame, is essentially an addiction. And that comes from, again, not being able to let go of the control in life. And so that's an imbalance in one way. Now, where we end up having longing. Now, if we don't grieve completely, we can stay mired in the grief, and we can come to expect that loss is our lot in life, that is all the world has for us, is loss, loss, and more loss. And this grieving, which doesn't complete, which doesn't proceed appropriately, that is in somehow resisted, but nonetheless dominates our life, can lead to actual frailty of wasting away and the inability to actually receive anything new in life. And that is the idea of the metal element, is give and take. The primary organ is the lungs, which we breathe, and we can both breathe in and we can breathe out, and we need to do both in order to actually be fully alive. We can't just decide, I'm only going to breathe in, that's an addiction to air, or I'm only going to breathe out, that's, well, in a way, an addiction to loss. So the balance point is embracing justice and letting go of what has been taken from us as quickly and as cleanly as we can, to move on to exploring what the universe is about to give us, and to not question the justice of divine will. The last element and the last virtue is water, and its associated virtue is wisdom. Now, wisdom comes from the ability to face the depths of the unknown. There's so much that there is in the world, and only some of it can be actually embraced with the conscious mind and really understood. Much of what we know at a subconscious level, and this is where our intuition comes from. And actually, to gain true wisdom about our lives and about the world, at some point we need to be able to face the unknown, and the unknown is typically scary. So So facing the unknown and not running from it is actually how we acquire wisdom. So this implies that we need to master our fear. Now, that's not denying our fear. That is coming to mastery with it, and that is a journey. So imbalance in fear leads to either tightness or recklessness. Now, by tightness, I mean that can be physical tightness. The water element governs contraction in the body, and so if you have an accumulation of fear that you have not dealt with and not faced and not set yourself the task of overcoming that fear, then it can lead to chronic muscular tension and chronic contraction of the body. And so it can be quite a physical tightness, but it can also be a mental or spiritual tightness where we are not generous with ourselves or generous with others. And that can be financial. So being financially tight, we often say that somebody's tight with their money when they seem reluctant to part with it. So that's fear. That's, oh, well, if I let go of this money, I won't get any more. And, you know, there's a balance, because if you have no fear of running out of money and you just spend it recklessly, which is our other way of straying from the virtue of wisdom, is that you just squander everything. And without sufficient fear, you don't value your life, and you take too many risks that can put your life at risk, and you may put your financial life at risk. And so the balance is to spend your money and your life force wisely, by knowing what to truly be afraid of and what fears are set forth in front of you to master, so that you can learn from them. And every time you face a fear and conquer it, that's when you actually gain wisdom. So the idea of water being related to both wisdom and fear actually does make sense, in that we do need to have a balanced relationship with our fear in order to actually continue to grow our wisdom in life. Because if we don't take any new challenges, we can't gain wisdom. And if we take on the wrong challenges, we can literally lose our life. So that's the idea of the five virtues, and I've given, you know, a brief explanation of them. I will give a bit more in each one of the element lectures, but I think setting out the idea that each element, and hence each organ in the body, is supposed to play a role in attaining a more spiritual way of being, a more enlightened way of being, and a way of being that is more in alignment with the idea of being a spiritual being, and somebody that we would actually like to be in a very practical sense. Few people would admit to wanting to be a terribly angry, violent person, and however, some people become that. And the idea of being a timid person is also not attractive. But being somebody who is actually embracing of all other people, well, that's a lofty goal that's appealing to many. But the idea that benevolence is only possible through actually embracing our anger is not how I was raised. And so discussing more deeply anger, its roles, and the functions of the underlying organs of the wood element gives us a clearer idea of the actual virtue and of emotional expression that needs to be achieved there. So I will go into all of that, but for now, I'll leave it at that, and the idea that proper anger leads to actual benevolence and tranquility is based on thousands of years of accumulated wisdom and discussion based on clinical observation. I'll also go into the beliefs that keep us from utilizing our emotions for growth. And to me, this is what the course really leads to, is a bit of theoretical discussion so that we understand what the goal is. But then the practical aspect is, well, why don't we do that? Why do we get stuck? Why do we fail to utilize these emotions as pointers towards proper response and proper growth? Because that is what allows us to have the insight that change is possible, that if we simply choose to see the world in a different way, that we could shift our mind and shift our both our emotional and physical responses to the world. So when this misperception of self and misperception of the world is clearly seen, then the innate wisdom of the body is able to act on it and transform the tendency to react into spiritual growth. So I want to spend a little bit more time on the emotions in this lecture before we conclude, because although I will go more into the emotions and their proper and improper expression and belief systems in each one of the individual lectures, I want to talk about how they all tie together before we finish this lecture. So the proper role of the emotions is the first thing that I want to go through, is that the wood element and primarily the liver generate anger, and they do so to manage our boundaries with the world and to keep things moving and growing. Anger alerts us to the idea that something needs to change, that you need to change, or this relationship needs to change. So if expressed appropriately, the change happens. If held on to or denied, then resentment and frustration and rage can arise. The fire element, and primarily the heart, generates both joy and sadness to keep us aware of our surroundings and to keep us truly present to the moment. And that enables both sharing in other people's joy, but it also enables compassion to share in their sadness and to connect to each other. So when imbalanced, we can either become manic or depressive. And so the idea that if we are laughing all the time, well, that's not actually appropriate. So, but we should laugh sometimes. And if we're sad all the time, that's not appropriate either. But we should be sad truly sometimes. The spleen generates worry. Now, worry is the emotion that corresponds to thinking. And so it enables thinking and learning. And that's a good thing, but too much worry can lead to confusion. And a simple way to understand that is that if you think about anything long enough, if you evaluate how many things that there are to think about any particular project, eventually you'll think of all the things that could go wrong, and as well as all the things that could go right, and it becomes too many things to think about, and you literally become confused. So, and with that confusion often comes a pessimism. The lungs, which is part of the metal element, is generating grief, and along with the large intestine. But the metal element generates grief to dissolve our attachments to things that have passed from our life. And that can be either an animal or a person, but it could also be a life situation that is really no longer part of our life. Grief that isn't expressed and released can lead to disintegration of tissues and hence disintegration of mind. And so it's important to release it appropriately. The kidneys generate fear to keep us alert to danger. That's important because without fear, you wouldn't look before you stepped off a curb. You'd just step out and not look to see if a bus was coming. And that doesn't even make a good story, so about why you lost your life. So fear is absolutely necessary to keep you alert to danger and to protect you and to stimulate you into activity to keep you alive. Now, without enough fear, you're reckless. With too much fear, if there's an accumulation of fear, basically you become paralyzed. You can't take activity because of the overwhelming contraction induced by the fear. So So what I've tried to convey in that is that each emotion actually is important. They do serve a proper role. And I've said just a little bit about how they can get out of balance there. Now, one of the principles of five-element theory is that each element, each energy, contributes to both generating another element as well as controlling or managing excess in another element. And so the order that I presented the elements in, wood, fire, earth, metal, and water, are typically drawn in a circle with fire on the top and wood on the left of the circle, but kind of on the high part of the circle, and earth over on the right of the circle, a bit below the level of fire, and then metal and water on the bottom part of the circle. But the idea is that there is a flow that goes from wood to fire to earth to metal to water around that circle, and that's called the generating cycle. Now, the idea is that, I'm not going to go through all of them, but the idea is that the strength of one element feeds the strength in the next. And a very easy one to understand is that water then is said to feed or generate the development of wood. And that makes sense, because if you water a tree, it grows. Wood is said to generate or feed the nourishment of fire. And if you throw more logs on the fire gets bigger. And so the idea is that if activity or energy in one element fosters activity or energy in the next element. And so each one of the elements actually depends on the other to keep it fed, to keep it stimulated and growing. There's also a system of checks and balances built into the theory, and that is that each element then controls another element, and that it's there to restrain any excesses that have accumulated in the other element. And so this is, again, goes around in a clockwise direction, just as the generating cycle did. And so again, the imagery is that the cycle begins with wood in the generating cycle and goes clockwise around to fire, earth, metal, and water, and then back around the circle to wood again, that the controlling cycle or regulating cycle skips an element. And so it goes from wood controls earth, and earth controls, so wood skips metal, skips fire to control earth, earth skips metal to control water, water skips wood to control fire, and fire skips earth to control metal, and metal skips the water element to control the wood element. So it actually means that every element's connected to every other element through this situation. Now, the ability of the emotions to both generate and control each other is one way to understand this generating and controlling cycle, because they are a different way of looking at physiology. And so it's easier to actually understand it from the emotional correspondences than it is from physical correspondences. So the idea is that anger arises when there's a need for change. And if the anger is expressed, the change happens. So if you're dissatisfied with something in your life, and you take effective change, and you actually accomplish or achieve a result that leads to more satisfaction, well, that leads to joy. And the emotion of wood is anger, and anger is what feeds the joy, and wood is what feeds the fire. So that correspondence works. Now, joy corresponds to an expansiveness of mind, an expansiveness of awareness. This can lead to an awareness of, great, what else could be different? And that reflecting or thinking about what else could be different is actually a transition from simple experience of joy into thinking and worry about, I wonder what this change means to my life. That reflection or that thinking or that worry leads to an awareness of what is no longer useful and maybe an old way of being that now actually has to be released for you to fully embrace the change that you just accomplished. And so that actually triggers the need to let go of some aspect of your mind or your life. And in other words, to grieve, which is the emotion of the mental element. And so grieving and this sense of loss, it can be a sense of a loss of a part of yourself. And in that sense, it leads to a partial death. And death is what the water element is trying to prevent, because it's trying to preserve your life through fear. And so the actual idea of dying, even if it's a part of you, even if it's an unproductive part of you, leads to fear. Fear leads to stagnation, and the fear of stopping there, of stagnating in that one cycle of change, then leads to a desire of rebirth, because lack of movement in life is lack of life. And so that desire for rebirth, to avoid being stuck and contracted, actually then generates anger, and then the cycle begins again. So that's a short description of how the five elements generate each other. Here's a way of thinking about how they actually control each other. So wood corresponds to anger, and wood is supposed to control earth, which corresponds to worry. Now, when you're thinking of doing something, you're thinking of various options, and if you think too long, then you become motionless, and you are then really avoiding making a decision by overthinking it. And to correct that excess of thinking or of worry, the wood element is supposed to generate anger to force a decision and movement. Enough already. Let's just do something. Better to get moving and make a change later than to sit here thinking for the rest of our lives. So anger is actually generated to control worry. Now, the earth element is supposed to control the water element. Earth corresponds to worry, water corresponds to fear. If you become afraid and then stay afraid after the reason for the fear has passed, then the earth element is supposed to generate worry or thinking to analyze the situation and see if it's rational to stay in this fearful state. And so a healthy earth element will generate some thinking to control fear and to keep it in proportion to what's actually going on. Now, joy is a happy state, and that's the natural emotion to the fire element, but water is supposed to control fire, and that means fear is supposed to control fire. And, you know, when you are being overly excited, overly manic, and you're laughing inappropriately, it's actually fear of offending people or in an extreme circumstance, fear of being locked away that will actually create a restraint of the joy and bring you back into being present, and whether or not that expression of joy is actually appropriate. So it observes the negative reactions to your excess joy and generates fear. Now, grief is important, and that's the emotion of the metal element, but fire is supposed to control the metal element. So if we get lost in our grief, and many people who suffered a severe loss can go through a phase where they're quite certain they'll never be happy again, then the fire element is supposed to generate joy in order to dissolve that excess grief by revelation, by making you witness something that is actually beautiful, something that brings you joy. And that moment of joy gives a light at the end of the tunnel for the grief, and it starts to control the excess expression of the grief. Now, anger is something that is important to move us forward. However, anger can be held on to, or we could not express our anger is another way of saying we've held on to that. And that leads to resentment and bitterness and judgment, which is not good for anybody. The metal element is supposed to control the wood, and so it does this by generating grief, Grief is, again, the emotional state that says, let it go. And so when the metal element says, let it go to the wood element, then it can help to balance an excess of anger and a holding on to of unproductive anger, and to thereby release judgment and resentment. So that's a brief description of the interaction of the five elements before we go into the individual elements and discuss them more at length. So to summarize this lecture, we have five sides to our physical and psychological nature. Each element in the five-element theory corresponds to specific organs with specific functions. These, again, are the officials of the empire. And if we can manage the officials, we can manage the empire. And if we can manage the organs, we can manage the 50 trillion cells of the body, including the countless billions or trillions of neurons in the brain, and govern actual thinking and expression. Each organ, along with having specific functions, has a personality. And each organ has an emotion associated with it that helps it to fulfill its role and that is congruent with its personality when in balance. Every element, and hence every organ, has a virtue to attain. There's a unique aspect of our spiritual growth that each element or each organ is supposed to achieve and is part of our learning process. And each virtue requires not just expressing an emotion, but accepting it and mastering it and learning from our emotional responses to the world. We develop beliefs through life experience, and this is often early childhood experiences or even fetal life experiences that condition us to a view of the world that prevent us from expressing our emotions in the most effective way. So if we're going to then move forward with our growth, with acquiring the virtues that are our essential nature, then addressing these beliefs or these distortions of mind that lead to both physical and mental disease, that is really where attention needs to go if we want to achieve transformation and take further steps along our path. So in the upcoming lectures, we'll begin with wood, and we'll do one lecture on each element. And each one of these five-element lectures will address all of these topics in more detail. I'll go into the virtue of the organ, the emotion, the virtue of the element, and the emotion of the element. But then I'll also go into the organs of each element and talk briefly about their major functions and roles, and I'm going to emphasize more their psychological or spiritual functions, but I will cover briefly some of their physical functions where necessary to give a sense of how that actually correlates to the actual organ and their role in the body. And I'm going to give you an idea of their personalities and to essentially name these officials and give them a face so that we can get to know them as personalities. And, you know, if you know their personalities, you know, is this organ the general or the treasurer? You know, you would name a different, you would pick a different personality to play the job of general in your empire than you would to pick somebody the role of accountant. And so understanding, you know, the function and the role and the personality, that gives us a better understanding of what ways that kind of personality can get distorted. And so then we can really see how distortions around emotional expression and beliefs around what's appropriate in emotional expression can actually result out of that understanding of each element, each organ, and each official. So join me next week for the first lecture on the wood element, which is the virtue of benevolence and the liver and gallbladder organs and the anger of emotion. Thank you for joining me.